Seahawks remained quiet yesterday in free agency, but rumors indicate the Hawks are still in on free agent Jadeveon Clowney and franchise-tagged pass rusher Yannick Ngakoue. Get the latest Seahawks free agent updates at 710sports.com/tracker. The Detroit Lions traded away cornerback Darius Slay to the Eagles for a third and fifth round pick. Slay then signed an extension with the Eagles that makes him the highest paid corner in the NFL. Todd Gurley was cut by the Rams. Phillip Rivers signed a one-year deal with the Colts. Tom Brady made his signing with the Bucs official.
Snapshot, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and More on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
The 5 o'clock refresh is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, made to chill. Well, we've been looking forward to this conversation because we've heard a ton of stories about this guy, and he's clearly a mentor to Dave Wyman, and you know him as the defensive coordinator of the Pittsburgh Steelers. He's with us now on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline. He is Keith Butler. Keith, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good. How y'all doing?
We're doing great. I got to tell you, I feel like I know you because I've heard Dave talk about you so often, and he's just always had these glowing remarks and these great stories. But I just want to know what were your impressions when you first met a very young Dave Wyman?
Well, he was he was a rookie. He was confident in what he was doing, which he should have been. But he had a little bit to learn, and sometimes. When you come out of college like that and you played well in college, then you feel pretty good about your athletic ability, and that's the way Dave was. And but he was always willing to listen, and he did a great job of it, of learning the defense and stuff like that. Great, he ended up being a great teammate, I thought.
Well, Butts, I was telling him that originally you wouldn't call me anything but boy. And I think, shortly after that, you stopped calling me that. But I was just telling these guys the story about you kind of telling me, hey, you were drafted to come here and replace me. And you know, most guys don't have that kind of attitude as players. You know, they're like, hey, I don't want the rookie coming in. But I thought to me it indicated that you were definitely bound for being a coach. Did you always want to coach?
I don't know if I always wanted to coach. My dad always coached. We had six kids in our family. He always coached me and my brothers when we were growing up, and then we got too old for him to coach. He coached my sisters, you know, so I kind of watched him do that, and that wasn't his job. I mean, his job, he worked at Redstone Arsenal and stuff like that. It was something he loved to do, and I must say I don't feel like I've worked a day of my life, you know. Everybody always talks about coaching, how hard it is and all that stuff, and I always say, hey, it beats the heck out of working for a living.
Hey, Keith, for being an old school guy, is it tough dealing with the newer age players?
I think most of the guys that come in now, social media is a big deal with everybody, and everything's about how many followers they got and all that stuff. It's still, in terms of winning, it's still a game. It's a team game, I've always thought. And I've thought the guys who were selfless, not selfish, but selfless, and did their job and knew that everybody else did their job and counted on each other to do their job, that's the best way to play defense in this league. And it hasn't changed any.
You know, Keith, Dave tells a story about when he was a rookie and you'd pull him over here and say, listen, they brought you in here to take my job, so you better learn.
Uh-huh.
Let me teach you something. Yeah. And I find that really unique because we've heard from players in today's game where they've been asked about the guy behind them or quarterbacks helping the backup, and they've come out and flat out said, it's not my job, that's the coach. And you know, there's certainly a feeling of being threatened by a young guy that's drafted at your position.
Right.
Was it just something about Dave, or was that just your nature? Just, hey, this is how you do it. You teach the next generation how to play this game.
He and Bosworth were drafted I believe it was my 10th year. It was my 10th year. And, you know, I was a 10-year linebacker, and I'd been starting for the previous eight. And, you know, I knew at some point in time they were going to try to get rid of me or replace me. And they brought two good guys in. So, you know, it's just a matter of numbers at that point in time. Those guys were playing inside linebacker. We were playing a 34 defense at the time. They were young guys, had a lot of ability, especially Dave, I thought. I thought Dave was the best of the two. But, you know, we had drafted Brian in the offseason and drafted a little bit higher. So there's a little bit of politics involved in stuff like that. But I felt like at the time watching those two guys come around, both of them had a lot of ability. And I thought Dave at the time would be a good player for the team, but also a good leader of the team as he got older. And I think a lot of times defensive guys have to see you play in order to respect what you do. And I think the more and more he played, I think the guys around him respected him a lot more.
Well, you said Brian Bosworth. I've never heard you refer to him in that way. Who are you talking about? Go ahead and tell everybody.
The Boz, man. The Boz. You know,
no,
everybody
called
knows
him,
who the Boz is.
You've called him Boxhead my entire life.
Oh, yeah, I know. I don't want to do that publicly now.
Oh, yeah. No, we let it all out on this show, Butts.
Yeah.
I see that. Yeah. Yeah. Well, let me ask you about the linebackers, and I'm sorry to say I texted you every time somebody breaks your tackling record. You were second on the list with, I don't know, 840-something. Bobby Wagner, and then K.J. Wright just passed you. He's number three now.
Yeah,
behind Bobby. And I was rooting for you, Butts, honestly. But, you know, it just records are meant to be broken. So, tell us what you think about those two linebackers. You've got a little bit of a chance to look at Bobby and KJ, right?
Yes. I always try to get an idea of what y'all are doing defensively and stuff like that. You gave a pretty good explanation, with plays and stuff like that, of what to try to do in terms of dropping all that stuff. Those two guys are good players. They play within the framework of the defense, and they both of them have real good range. Both of them play all over the field, and they make a lot of tackles because of it. So Eugene Robinson was ahead of me. I was second, and then I came on and got it, and then again this year got broke again. So it's not as hallowed as it used to be.
Hey, Keith, I'm wondering, when you got drafted in 1978, had you ever been to Seattle before? And reflecting on your career, what was it like to play here? And I imagine you really enjoyed your time there in the kingdom.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun there in Seattle. I was a fish out of water, you might say. That's the reason they always helped me help me. Because, you know, I was from Alabama. I went to school in Memphis. I'd never had been that far away from home. When I got to Seattle and was there for a couple of years, I really liked it, especially how pretty Seattle is, and Mount Rainier. Playing golf a lot with Kenny Easley at the time. We used to get. I was surprised one day Easley called me up and said, "Hey, let's go play golf. I'll come by and get you here in a couple minutes." And then he pulls up in a Rolls Royce, and then next thing I know, I'm riding with Bill Russell and Easley to go play golf somewhere. I was awestruck by Russell, but I really enjoyed my time at Seattle. Probably it was the best thing that happened to me in terms of playing professional sports at the time, and then I left and I went back home to Memphis and finished my degree there, and then I had a dean of students coming and asked me if I'd be interested in coaching, and after he did that, I went home and talked to my wife, and my wife told me that she couldn't see me going to work in a coat and tie every day, so I became a coach.
I don't think Butler even knows how to tie a tie.
Yeah. Well, it's been a while, I'd say that. I need one of those bow ties that's got the little things in it that you can stick in there.
You know, Bill Russell still lives here on Mercer Island, and I'm wondering, Keith, do you ever ask Dave how many interceptions he had compared to you? Because I think you were ahead 8-3 in that department.
Yeah, that might have been it. That might have been it at the time, yeah. It was something like that. It might have been, but you know, my first 5 or 6 years, I played on all the nickel stuff, and then everybody started putting some 3 wide receivers in there, which was unknown in the league at the time, and so they started putting in faster linebackers than me. So I didn't play on third downs. Everybody, because the league started specializing down in distance and stuff like that. So. I played a little bit, but not as much. Dave had was faster than I was when he came in. You know, he was a good football player. Should have probably played before he did at the time. But I had a real good experience there, and had a good experience with him. I mean, both him and Boxhead were good. They're good dudes. Both of them were. And
Butler never caught.
They were fun to have as rookies.
He never taught me that one, Jim, the interception part, because I had 3 pathetic interceptions and the worst run backs ever in the history of defensive football.
That hits you in the face. Hey, if it hits you in the face, you got to catch them, man.
Keith Butler, former Seahawk, now defensive coordinator for the Pittsburgh Steelers, is our guest here with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle. And Keith, one of the things that Dave likes to complain about in today's game is the rules and how they're sort of just taking away the defense's ability to do things the way you guys used to. And he has a saying, you know, make football violent again and all of that. And I'm just curious, as a guy that played when you did and now you coach defense, how tough is it to coach a way of playing that wasn't really the way that you had to play?
Well, it makes me feel like I'm out of my element, and I'm sure that's the way Dave feels too, because of the things that they're, you know, everything seems like it's geared more towards offense, which, you know, they're trying to score more points, they're trying to get the TV ratings up and all that, you know, they're making a lot more money, which is fine with me. I made, you know, as a coach, I probably made more money than I ever made as a player. You know, and then I think in 82, we had a strike. And the reason I went out on a strike was I felt like at that time we needed to have free agency. And then we didn't get free agency until, you know, they broke the strike back then and we all came in. And then finally through collective bargaining, because we didn't have an agreement, the players didn't have an agreement with the owners at the time. Finally, they came around with some form of free agency. And so, you know, as a consequence, you know, we have the free agency that we have today. And that's a good thing about the league, because to me, it should take care of the players. The players, it's a very difficult time. I mean, hard to play 10 years in this league and then get out. I've had 2 hips replaced and a couple of shoulders replaced. So, you know, I've been fortunate. This league has been good to me the whole time. It's hard for me to criticize the league, but if I would criticize it, I'd say it's gotten the rules have gotten too far down for defensive guys. It's a little bit more advantage for offensive guys. Like, you know, you'll see guys come down and pick. What used to be a pick on a route is no longer a pick. They can come in and wall you off, and then you can't cover people in the flat sometimes. So there's a lot of things like that going on. There's a lot of good hits happening in the league, and if they're close, they're going to call you know, some type of illegal hit if it's even close. So that's harder on the players, I think, defensive players especially, because to adhere to the rules that they want you to play by nowadays is a lot harder than just, you know, taking off and, you know, being able to knock the crap out of somebody. You can't do that anymore. You got to, you know, make sure you don't hit them in the head with the head. That's what I always tell my guys. Don't hit them in the head with the head. And but there are some times that you got to tackle people, and there's some, you know, when you're tackling somebody, sometimes you can't help where your head goes. You can't help what happens in those situations, and you're still going to get called, and, you know, you could get thrown out of the game.
Yeah, I think that's the one thing, Butts, having played, and you too, that people don't realize how fast things happen out there. And you put it in super slow motion, and it looks like the guy's doing it on purpose. But, yeah, that's been my biggest complaint. But let me ask you about your defense, man, because going back just the last 3 years, two of the last 3 years you've led in sacks. The 1 year you didn't, you were second. And you're just, are you dialing up lots of pressure? Because that's been all the talk here in Seattle, because the Seahawks only had 28 sacks last year. And, you know, they were second to last, and you guys were number one. And, yeah, tell us about your philosophy and how much sacks matter in your defense, because they don't seem to matter that much with the Seahawks, but it's certainly something that they need to get going.
Well, I think, you know, what's happened with us is, you know, we've tried to make sure that, you know, if we're going to bring somebody, it's usually five instead of four, and we're going to change it up a little bit. We're going to bring four most of the time on third down. We bring five more on first and second down than we do any other time. The reason we do that, Dave, is because, as you know, this is the play action. The problem with play action in a running game, we run the blitzes we run are mainly to try to stop the run, or if they're not running, then we're trying to stop the play action pass and not let people have enough time for quarterbacks to throw deep over routes and crossing routes. That's what the league is trying to get to now. So what we're basically trying to do is just try to defend somebody hitting the long ball on us, you know, and give them a bunch of time by max protecting and getting some people down the field. So the reason that we blitz is really for defense, and a lot of times we end up with guys hugging the guys that they're supposed to be covering, and they end up getting the sack. So you know, it might look like we're blitzing, you know, six people or seven people or something like that, but we're really not. We're blitzing five. We're letting the guys who have coverage on the tight ends and the backs and stuff like that, we're letting them hug them up, and sometimes they get to the quarterback and doing that. We've had some real good rushers. Our outside linebackers have been real good. We got two good outside linebackers, and they complement each other. We lost Stephon Tuitt last year early, but Cam Hayward has always played well for us. He's been a Pro Bowler for a long time. T.J. Watt is Pro Bowler for us this year at outside linebacker. Bud Dupree, we feel like that he probably should have been in a Pro Bowl, but they complement each other. And the thing that we try to do is we try to pressure on first and second down. Maybe not pressure as much on third down, but let four-man rush do it, and then change it up a little bit. Sometimes have a three-man rush, and sometimes have a four-man rush, sometimes have a five-man rush on third down. Try to change it up. As you know, in this league, if you do the same thing over and over again, somebody's going to bite you on the butt. So what we try to do is change it up a little bit.
You played against the Seahawks in the second game of the season this past year, and it'd be interesting to get a defensive coordinator's perspective on how difficult it is to game plan for Russell Wilson.
Russell is the guy who makes that thing go. I mean, there's no doubt about that. He's a, you know, very smart football player. He got away from us. You know, there's a couple of critical times. You go back and look at that film. And which we have, we've gone over our film from last year, in the last two or three weeks. And what he did, you know, he got away from us a couple of times that we should have tackled him, and that was a big play. That's how close the game was. and that was the big plays in the game, and that ended up winning the game for them. We just had to do a better job of tackling or trying to get them on the ground, and we weren't able to do it. And that's a testament to him, because I think he's one of the better quarterbacks in the league. Very smart player, too.
Keith, when you're not playing the Seahawks, obviously, is it still a team? I mean, you spent 10 seasons with the Seahawks. Do you still kind of root for them? Do you keep an eye on what they're doing?
Oh, yeah, all the time. The only time I haven't root for them, of course, when we hadn't played them, but I was fortunate enough to coach in the Super Bowl 40 game and end up beating them at the time. We have one of our coaches on staff here, Terrell Austin, was coaching there at the time, so I give him a hard time about it. And he was also coaching since I've been here. This is my 18th year here. And since I've been here, we've won 2 Super Bowls and been to 3. And 2 of those Super Bowls, Terrell has been the coach either at Arizona or at Seattle at the time. So I give him a lot of crap about that, just to pick at him a little bit. But I've been fortunate here. I've enjoyed my career here. I enjoy, doing what I do, coaching. And, the players are still fun to me. I mean, they're just young men that want to go out and have fun and not necessarily work for a living, but play for a living.
Yeah, like you were saying about coaching, I feel that way about this job, too. It's not like, putting on a suit and tie, that's for sure. But yeah, it sure has been. It's been fun watching you, Butts. And I knew you were going to be a good coach from the time that you were, here in Seattle. And really appreciate you coming on with us, man. It's been good hearing from you. And keep in touch, you hillbilly. All right, text me every once in a while. Right. By the way, people are texting in saying that you sound like President Clinton. So it's not President Clinton. This. Ex-president, this is Keith Butler, defensive coordinator for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah, no, I would never claim to be Bill Clinton now, but especially with my wife sitting in the other room.
Hey, Keith, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Anytime, brother, anytime.
There you go. Keith Butler, a lot of fun talking to him, man. Obviously, Dave Wyman with great fondness, and it seems like it's reciprocated as well. So a lot of fun speaking with him. Coming up next, ESPN's Bill Barnwell had a really rough comparison for one of the O-line signings the Seahawks made this week. We're going to break that down next with him. It's Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
It is Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle. A reminder, you can listen to our show via the 710 Sports app. It's powered by Dubin Law Group. It's free. It's very convenient these days as we're all stuck at home, so just take us with you. Download the app for free. Joining us now on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline, you read his stuff at ESPN. You see him everywhere. He is Bill Barnwell with us. Bill, how are you, sir?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
It's going all right. We're just kind of waiting for something big to happen with the Seahawks. Nothing yet to this point, but mm-hmm. We saw a tweet that you sent out yesterday talking about the one-year, $3.3 million deal with Cedric Oboihe. Would qualify for an F if we graded backup lineman grades. That's the worst O-line deal they've done since Jokel, which sent a shiver down every Seahawks fan's spine, Bill. Why do you say this about Oboihe?
He's really struggled over the course of his career. He's a guy who came into the NFL as a first-round pick, had some injuries, and he was the guy the Bengals drafted to replace Andrew Whitworth. And that went about as disastrously as it could have gone. They've now tried to replace him with 2 different players. I think 3 different guys, actually, in the long run, the Bengals replacing Andrew Whitworth. He's a project, and he's not making $3.3 million, but this is a guy who should be getting the minimum, realistically. He is a you know, a guy who you might hope, hey, there's some athletic traits in there. We're going to hope that we can develop him to something in camp, but he's not going to make the roster otherwise. This is a guy who I think is guarantees right around $1.6 million, which is it's the wrong move for what the Seahawks need right now.
Well, Bill, what about some of the other things that the Seahawks have done? They signed a couple of other Brandon Shell and then the Finney kid out of Pittsburgh.
Yep.
And what do you think about some of the other things they have done, including not signing Clowney yet?
Yeah, so in terms of the offensive linemen, Brandon Shell is not especially impressive with the Jets, I have to admit. Maybe they see something they can correct, but, I mean, I would say a sub-Jermaine Effetti right tackle, certainly. And given that Jermaine Effetti is still on the market, I wonder what his deal is going to come in at, whether it would have been better to re-sign Effetti, who obviously, you know, was very frustrating at times for the Seahawks. I like Finney, an underrated player. I think someone who's going to, you know, play meaningful snaps for the Seahawks at guard, you know, going to be a good player for them. The Jadeveon Clowney thing is really interesting. And I think the reason why he hasn't signed somewhere yet is a little bit about his performance, which, you know, if you're going to pay a guy $20 million a year, which is sort of where he's at in terms of his, you know, his demands or what he's expecting from the market, you can't have a three-sack season. That's part of it. You only had three sacks. And I know he was better than that sack total, but just a hard sell to your owner to say, hey, we're going to pay that much money for a guy with three sacks. But I think the bigger concern is we're looking at a guy here who has microfracture surgery on his knee in his past, who has had that core injury that bothered him for the second half of 2019. And that's not something that's going to necessarily scare away teams, but they're going to want to get medicals on it. And, of course, given the shortage of doctors, the shortage of, you know, the inability to travel in some cases here where we have the, you know, of course, Washington being one of the places that are, you know, people are trying to stay home because of the coronavirus, it's more difficult to get that medical information than it would be during a typical year. So I think we're seeing teams who might be interested say, hey, we can't go out and give Jadeveon Clowney $19 million a year or $20 million a year unless we get a full medical, and we're just not in a position to go to Jadeveon Clowney and get a full medical done.
Well, Bill, I got to admit something to you. Two things. One, I really appreciated the effort that you put into your story. I mean, it's like you gave a grade to every team for every trade and every free agent signing there on ESPN.com. But it also occurred to me that, boy, I'm glad that Bill Barnwell wasn't one of my profs over at Washington State, because I probably wouldn't have graduated, because you're a pretty tough grader. I'm wondering about Clowney, contract-wise. What would it take, if you could speculate for us, like, let's say Tennessee or Seattle signs him to a contract. At what price point would you say that team got an A for getting Clowney?
An A is tough. I think an A you're looking at probably a one-year deal. I mean, just, you know, with Clowney, there's going to be a lot of risk if you're paying him a lot of money. This is a guy who I said has an injury history in his past, who has not had that sort of, you know, blowout dominant season. We've seen it for games. I mean, that Niners game was incredible. But, you know, I think you're looking at a guy who, at the end of the day, is probably, you know, going to get enough money that it's going to be tough to get that A grade. But I would think if it's a one-year deal, that's pretty low risk. I think I would, you know, put that into the A category, depending on the price tag. But, you know, you don't need to get an A. At the end of the day, it's not about getting an A. It's about getting a great player. And I think Jadeveon Clowney is a great player and was great at times for the Seahawks last year. So given their lack of options, I think if his price tag does come down, I think the Seahawks would be well-positioned and be, you know, sort of a good mind to go and pounce.
What did you think of what the Seahawks did with Jaron Reed, bringing him back on that two-year deal? He was a guy that two seasons ago, not last year, but the year before, I mean, for an interior lineman, 10.5 sacks looked like the sky was going to be the limit. Then last year he's dealt with a six-game suspension, and then ultimately just didn't hear his name much at all last year. So maybe the market a little softer than it otherwise would be. Do you feel like that was a good deal for what he's produced so far in his career?
You know, obviously it depends on what we get out of him. You know, if it's the guy from 2018, that's an awesome deal. And if it's not, he hasn't been a guy who's demanded, you know, that sort of money. Most of it is guaranteed, which is not ideal. Obviously, if you're a team, you want to guarantee as little as possible. But this is a guy who I think, you know, because of that domestic violence accusation that caused him to be suspended for six games, there were teams that did shy away from him when he hit free agency. So, you know, I think he is a talented player. But I think this might have been a wake-up call to him that, you know, he might have figured he was ready to get that big contract. And obviously, you know, he's going to make good money. But the reality is, you know, that sort of contract he might have gotten a year ago, he has to get back to that level on the field to get that sort of money, whether it's from the Seahawks or from another football team.
Yeah, Bill, you know, we were talking about timing yesterday and how key it is in free agency. I mean, with Jaron Reed, if he has that 10.5 sack season last year, you know, and doesn't get suspended, as you mentioned, you know, and then you look around the league like Shaq Barrett, even Clowney. I mean, if he had a 9.5, his top producing season, 9.5 sack season last year, maybe he makes an extra couple, $3 million. Are you seeing a lot of that with these free agent signings, that guys are just timing it really well?
Always is going to be an issue of timing, where you can have that big season at the right time, you're going to get a lot of money. Look at Eric Ebron, who signed today with the Steelers, a pretty small deal, 2 years and $12 million. If he had been a free agent last year and sort of hit the market last year when the Colts, after a 13 touchdown season, I think, in 2018, you know, he would have got an enormous contract. He would have got an Austin Hooper size contract, I think. So I think at the end of the day, you can't force time. You can't expect, you know, to have a great season at the last moment when you want to, but it does go a long way. Teams are—they're not the smartest. They pay attention to what happened most recently, and even something like the Super Bowl. I think it's going to help Chris Jones if he had a dominant game in the second half of the Super Bowl. That goes a long way, because that's the last thing, you know, teams saw before they hit free agency.
Right. Bill Barnwell of ESPN has been our guest here with Bob, Dave, and more. Bill, thanks so much for taking a few minutes with us. We really appreciate it. Look forward to talking again.
My pleasure, guys.
There you go. Bill Barnwell with his thoughts. Not very high on what the Seahawks did on the O-line. Hopefully it turns out to be a lot different than that, because they could use it. Meanwhile, Governor Jay Inslee spoke to the press this afternoon. We're going to get to check in on the latest news with what's happening around here locally, bring you up to speed with Aaron Mason from Cairo Knights on our sister station 97.3 FM. That's coming up next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
It is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle. We've been doing our best to keep everybody up to speed. As much as we're a diversion from all of the heavy news out there, we do want to keep you up to date on what's happening here locally, with the governor speaking just a little while ago to the press. And joining us now to give us the very latest on what's going on, our buddy Aaron Mason from Cairo Knights over on our sister station 97.3 FM is with us.
Yeah, hey, how guys. Are you, man? I'm doing all right. A little inundated with news, as is the new normal these days, but it's not all bad news. How about that? There's some decent.
Well,
it's not the apocalypse.
Give us the good news.
So here's the good news. People are good. King County Metro. Let's talk about transit. If you rely on transit to get anywhere, which a lot of people still do, ridership has dropped precipitously in the last few weeks, and they had to make some changes. They had to cut some bus lines. They had to reduce the amount of buses that are out there. But they said today, this is King County Metro, Sound Transit, and a few other places, community transit, you no longer have to pay a fare, and you're going to board at the back of the bus. This is an effort to keep people socially distanced, to make sure that the drivers are safe. There's not exchange of cash or anything like that. If you're somebody who has to use the ramp to get on the bus at the front door, you're still allowed to do that. But for the rest of us, we get in through the back door and don't have to pay anything. Well, how about that?
Yeah, well, you mentioned good news and people doing things like that, but how about some of the individuals that are doing things? You're seeing stuff in the sports world, and what about, you know, like companies and things like that that have been kind of chipping in?
Yeah, there's a lot of that going on. People are realizing that, you know, there's been some huge shortages of medical equipment for people on the front lines who are interacting with patients day in and day out, 24 hours a day. And one of the things, actually, that the Seahawks did, Seahawks and CenturyLink Field, are going to pay part-time employees during the during this outbreak. They said that you know, events were canceled and people were going to be out of work, and they said today that they are going to pay more than $700,000 to part-time employees who have been affected. That is just one of the steps that they and Vulcan and the Paul G. Allen Family Foundation, they announced a big plan to donate a bunch of stuff to a bunch of groups all across the spectrum. People who are in the arts communities who are suffering right now, people who are in the medical communities, they're really trying to get out there and get ahead of this, because we have, you know, we have some shortages. There are some necessary things out there, personal protective gear for folks that don't have it or are about to run out. And so charity is doing its thing, which is always good to see. There was a press conference not too long ago from Governor Inslee, and a lot of people thought coming into this, because he announced that he was gonna talk today a couple days ago, and people were saying, well, here comes the lockdown, here comes shelter in place. That's something that that Governor Gavin Newsom in California did yesterday for all 40 million of the residents of California. They are not allowed to go anywhere unless it's an emergency, or they need to go get groceries, or they need to go get medications. And so people were saying, well, this is what Inslee's going to say today, but it wasn't. It wasn't. He says he's not going to throw that hammer down, because he's worried about the economic impact that it might have. And so what he did say was that we need to keep doing the social distancing, and we need to get better at it. Not enough people are doing it. And so he just spent a lot of time being pretty emotional about the fact that, you know, the risk of an enormous explosion of this virus remains real. That is a quote from him, and it does. But if we do what we're supposed to do, we can flatten that curve, and we can contain this thing, and we can ride it out.
Okay, so Aaron, you're saying then, even though what California has done and what they're doing in New York and Illinois,
yeah,
that it might be avoided here, or is this something that we can maybe expect in the next week or two?
I think, well, both things are certainly on the table. Nobody who tells you what's going to happen next week with any kind of certainty is being honest. Nobody knows what's going to happen. But what I get from Inslee is that he's trying to avoid that kind of situation, because it does exacerbate the economic impact that it has. And so he's saying, listen, guys, if we can do this, if we can be responsible as individuals, if we can maintain social distancing and wash our hands and follow all these social rules that we're supposed to be following right now, then yes, potentially we could avoid having to have any kind of bigger shutdown than we already do. Speaking,
Aaron, I was telling.
Yeah, go ahead, Bob.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, speaking about going places, now in the state of Washington, any sort of medical procedure, whether it's your doctor or your dentist, they are now emergency only. And that means you can't go get your teeth cleaned. You can't go in for cancer screenings, colonoscopies, mammograms, like no preventative sort of medicine is being practiced right now. It's really all of that industry, all of that community is focused almost entirely on trying to figure out this COVID situation. And the ones that aren't are just there for emergencies as needed. So I thought that was important, too.
Yeah, that's good to know. Also, as far as restaurants, I know a lot of people are still, you know, relying on restaurants in terms of just going to pick up food. I know you can't sit down and eat there, but are they expected to remain open?
Yeah, as far as we know, they're expected to remain open. The only time that would not happen is if the governor instituted a shelter in place decree. And that's what we've seen in California and Illinois and New York. Then you're not allowed to go pick up food from a restaurant. You have to go to grocery stores, because the food supply chain is healthy. It's fine. We don't have to worry about running out of food or cleaning supplies or anything like that, as long as people aren't hoarding like maniacs, which they shouldn't be. Those people are the worst of the worst. Then we're going to be okay. But the restaurant industry will probably have to close its doors if it gets to that sort of shut it down call from the governor. Did I mention too that two other things that are being shut down in King County and Seattle are playgrounds and sports courts. So if you're looking to blow off some stress playing a little basketball or soccer or something, they're saying, well, first of all, you shouldn't be that close to people. And secondly, now the courts and fields where you used to do that, they are going to be shut down for the foreseeable future.
Wow. As far as you all know, right, golf courses stay open?
No, Jim. They're down too. As far as I know, I guess if you want to go out there by yourself, there's probably not too many people who are going to stop you. I wouldn't stop you. But I don't stop Jim Moore.
So my wife and I can't go play tennis at the local tennis court?
No. Court's going to be shut down as of today.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's the rule.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Aaron, thanks so much, man. We really appreciate the update.
Yeah, anytime, guys. Appreciate you having me.
There he is, Aaron Mason from Cairo Knights. Check him out starting at 7 p.m. over on 97.3 FM, our sister station. Meanwhile, we'll get back to the conversation of football with the professor, John Clayton. He joins us next. It's Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn.
Because knowledge is power.
Every day with Bob, Dave, and Maura is an opportunity for us all to learn something. Right, Maura?
Every single day.
Perfect. Perfect. What did we learn today?
Well, we learned that apparently Jim is getting jacked during this time period where he's working at home.
It's kind of sad that you would actually enjoy that, Jim, that you just would enjoy not being on the show. Come on, man.
Bob, oh, no, I'm happy to be here, Bob.
Okay. Well, good to know. Anyway,
I just did 30 push-ups during the break, by the way.
Congratulations.
I don't know why.
Meanwhile,
gross to me for some reason.
Jim doing push-ups is gross?
What are you trying to get in, like,
what's Dave mumbling about?
I don't know. You're going to try to fit into a Speedo or something? Why? What's with the push-ups? You're too old for push-ups.
He's getting very muscly.
Was that Maxine's?
No, my wife felt like she needed to pipe in, I guess.
I like that Kathy piped in. That was good. Good stuff.
Very muscly.
Maxine. are you getting muscly, Jim?
2 days in a row of 150 push-ups. Yeah, I am getting muscly, Bob.
I do like that you wait till the show to do them. You save it till showtime.
Yeah. Well, anybody who wants to join in with me, we can do it again Monday, all of us.
Oh, Jim's Dave. Fitness challenge.
Or, Jim, you could do them before Dave. Or after the show. There's always that opportunity.
Well, I've been working out
in the morning.
I know
that, but I just thought it'd be kind of fun to do it during the break.
What else did we learn, Maura?
We learned that if you're in need of teepee, the professor has it.
And, well, it was great. And I'll tell you a story because I went up to the QSC in Newcastle yesterday and, they recognized me there. So one of the managers says, hey, John, we got toilet paper for you because we just got a big shipment in. And so I was down to about maybe 6 rolls. And so, and of course, what they do is they allow you to get one packet, but I got a packet of 60. So I've got 66 right now.
What's he doing, man? 66. I didn't even think they sold packs that big. At Costco, I think it's like 36 rolls or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't think QFC sells packs that big. He got hooked up or something. I'm down to 2. I'm going to have to steal toilet paper from work before I go home today.
Go get some from the professor.
Building, yeah.
Yeah, the building's empty, Maura. You can have free reign of every bathroom in there.
Still so weird that is what is everybody's making a run on is toilet paper.
It's ridiculous. And I told you before the show, and I didn't say it on the air, but I went to Costco last night, and one of the people that worked there told me about people getting in fist fights in the store, in the parking lot, people climbing the racks at Costco, people trying to haul out of there and banging into cars, and it's just like it's madness there. People need to just calm the hell down. If you're one of those people getting in a fist fight over toilet paper in Costco, you're a loser. You're very, very sad.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that.
Jeez.
What's wrong with you?
Relax a little bit. There's enough to go. There's no shortage of toilet paper being made. There's nothing. There's no problem with the supply line. It's just people hoarding it, creating the problem. All right, I'm off my soapbox. What else did we learn, Maura?
We learned that Jim made a new word.
But this guy's a slob. And he's sitting there giving the reporter a hard time. Now he's giving his players a hard time. And he thinks he's like Bill Belichick, you know, recometh or something. And I'm going, the guy hasn't proven anything yet.
Recometh.
Sounds like he's having an effect on Jim because Jim's doing the push-ups during the parade.
Jim, were you trying to say the second coming of Bill Belichick?
Yeah, I think so. something like that.
I like recometh.
You know, sometimes when I get going, you know, my brain just malfunctions and I have a hard time coming up with what I want to say.
I liked it.
I like that.
Did we learn anything else? And the delay makes it more difficult.
It does. It does, certainly. Anything else, Maura?
No, that's all we learned today.
All right, there we go. I want to thank our guests today, John Clayton, Keith Butler, Bill Barnwell, and Aaron Mason, all for joining us on the show. Big show today. Great job by Maura and Brian back there at the station. If you missed any of today's show, just head to the podcast page. Again, this comes in handy now. A lot of people can't stay in front of the radios the way they used to, so the podcast is there for you. Listen at your own convenience. Just head to 710sports.com, click the podcast button, and then just click on our picture, and it's right there for you. Have a great weekend, everybody. Stay safe. Social distancing. Be responsible. We'll be back with you on Monday right here with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
I mean, sometimes I lack passion, but I do. I admit it.